There we go. All right. So we are official. We are now on the March 2018 LHON live call. And we have a wonderful guest tonight. Little backstory on this. Justin Holland, who is our guest, we met on Twitter. And it was one of those days where Justin decided to actually search for hashtag LHON to see what popped up. And lo and behold, all kinds of things popped up, including my Twitter handle, which is Girl Gone Blind. And he messaged me, which turned into some messaging, which turned into a couple phone calls, which turned into, oh, my gosh, I need you to be my guest on the next call. So he's got a great story. He's, losing his vision, ended up landing him just to follow his passion. And he's just got the best attitude, and I can't wait to have him here and tell you his story. So, Justin, I'm going to turn the call over to you, and we're going to talk a little bit about where it all began for you when you started losing some of your vision.
Can you hear me yet?
Yes. There you are. Yes.
Oh, okay. So I didn't even have to unmute anything.
No, we didn't.
Okay. Okay. Awesome. So my name is Justin Holland, and about almost 2 years exactly, in May of 2016 is when it all kind of started happening. And a little bit of background on myself, I grew up and, was playing sports and just was the average little boy. And when I went to college, I went for mechanical engineering. And then in April of 2016, it was my third year of college, but it was the spring semester, and out of nowhere, just a little spot was in the center of my left eye, and it was kind of funny. I just got glasses like a year and a half before that, so in my head, I'm thinking, and I lost them, but I didn't want to tell my mom I lost them because they're like $600. So I was like, I'll just hold off on that. But in my head, I was thinking I just needed a new pair of glasses. I just needed to go back and get some more glasses. But after, I think about 2 weeks after I first noticed the spot in my left eye, I was actually playing basketball, and that was when I really noticed something was kind of funny, because the spot was really messing with, like, my depth perception. For instance, when someone was passing the ball, I felt like I was going to kind of clap my hands and the ball was going to smack me in the face. So that was in April of 2016, and then it kind of just started from there. I went to the eye doctor to get my eyes checked, and they didn't know, of course they didn't know what was going on. And then one thing led to another. They sent me to another doctor, a neuro-ophthalmologist, and then that's when kind of the endless, tests just kind of came on. So a lot of tests, one of the first things they told me was it was a vitamin deficiency, so they kind of wasted a whole month giving me B12 vitamins, which of course was not the problem. And then I believe it was June 1st of 2016 was when I was declared actually legally blind, and that was the last day that I drove. I shouldn't have been driving. I don't know why I drove for as long as I did. I look back on it, and that was just very, very stupid of myself to do that, because definitely shouldn't have been driving. But, so that kind of happened, and then the test just continued really from April when it all started. I had, continuous visits and tests just for them trying to figure it out. And I ended up at Wake Forest Hospital, which is, it's pretty close to where I live. So that was where they did the same old test, and then they basically said, we're going to send off the genetic testing for, of course, LHON, and I think it was August is when the test results came back, and I was positive for LHON. And I know some of y'all know which mutation it is. I believe my mom might have a paper saying which one it is, but off the top of my head, I don't know which exact mutation that I have. But basically, when it all started in April, I moved home from college and kind of stopped going to school to try to figure this out. And then I was back in my hometown and working in a restaurant for, really as long as I possibly could. my goal was to, you know, I was a server in college, so I figured I could move home and basically get a job serving tables and make a little bit of money while all this was happening. And that was really all I was doing, was working in a restaurant and also working out, which is really what I'm passionate about. But I started out as a food runner in the restaurant, and then I told them that my vision was, you know, something was up. Obviously, I didn't tell them it was getting really bad or anything. So I started out as a food runner, and then, you know, it really started getting to the point where for me to read paper, it looked like I was, like, sniffing the paper. It was really close. I didn't tell any of the waitresses or waiters that worked in the restaurant, and I was reading a ticket one time, and one of the guys, I mean, he asked me if I was sniffing the check that prints out in the back that has the orders on it. But yeah, so it's so close to my face. And and I worked in this restaurant, and I believe until October. Only thing I did was ran food, and they were very, very nice and worked with me so that I could work as long as I possibly could. But it really got to the point where it was a very dimly lit restaurant, and it got to the point where I was not really, you know, capable of doing much for, you know, much good inside of the restaurant. So once I stopped working there in October of 2016, that was when I kind of started, you know, doing what I love and what I'm passionate about, which is, you know, I've been working out and been into fitness ever since I was about 14 or 15. But of course, I've never really pursued it like I am now. So that was when everything started, and I really started diving into all of that. And for me, though, my eyesight progressed from April until January of 2017. So, like, 8 months, I think, is when it kind of just, that was how long it took. And, I think October, November, early December, late November, I met with a, or maybe sometime November, I met with a social worker that works in my state for visually impaired and blind people. And I remember they brought out all these gadgets, all these, you know, things. And the Zoom things, I got one of them and, you know, just hoping that, like, maybe that would help me. And that really, it really didn't really, you know, help that much. And they, you know, I tried all these little gadgets that she had. And then she also asked if I wanted to go through orientation and mobility training, which is, of course, learning how to use a cane. And at first, I guess it was kind of like a dignity thing, or, you know, I just didn't want to be a guy walking around with this, like, big long stick in front of me. You know, and at the time, I still had a little bit of vision in my right eye, where I could, you know, I'd basically be looking almost all the way to my left to use my peripheral vision in my right eye to get around. But, you know, that got me into trouble. You know, I ran into a few poles and a few doors doing that. So, I would say after 2 weeks after I told her that I didn't want to do it, I gave her a call back and said, yeah, I would like to, you know, get signed up for, you know, to have someone come out and show me how to use a cane. So that is the first 6 to 8 months of the journey, and that was about 2 years ago, coming up on exactly 2 years.
Justin, so you, you know, you, I saw in a video that I actually posted and you posted that you, oh, by the way, Justin is a huge YouTuber. He has a YouTube channel. Of course, we'll give out the all the channels and all the stuff that he has. But there was a part in there where you're sitting on the couch. I'm not sure who you're with. You know, because I'm all zoomed in on my computer, and you're opening a cane, and you're just I couldn't see your facial expression, but, you know, I know that feeling of this. I gotta use this. You know, and I'm curious, is that how, when you said dignity, is that how you were feeling? Is self-conscious or like everyone's going to look at me? What were your thoughts going in with to orientation mobility with the cane?
Well, I don't know if I would necessarily say it was like, I mean, I think for me is, and I like to be a very independent person. And the whole time, and this is kind of where I guess it comes from, just like I said, I drove way longer than I should have ever drove. And I think for me, it was, I didn't.
Don't you miss driving?
Oh, yeah, I do. I'm very into cars, and I used to love driving. So that's one thing that, you know, I grew up working on cars, so I really missed that aspect of life. I could say, like, even when I first started working in the restaurant, you know, people would ask, you know, once they kind of figured out what was going on, they would always ask, and I would say, well, I think it's done progressing. And every 2 weeks it would get worse, and every 2 weeks it would get worse. And for me, you know, that's why I drove as long as I did, is because I didn't want to, I thought in my head that it's not going to get, my vision's not going to get any worse. And I think that's what really happened with the cane, is I was like, nah, it's, you know, I'm not going to lose that much of my eyesight where I'm going to need to use this cane. And I'm not really sure, you know, I've never been someone that cared too. I mean, I think we all definitely care a little bit about what others think of us. But I don't know if that was, it definitely did make a difference, because, you know, when I first got my cane, and I remember she showed me a little bit of how to use it, but when I was in public, it just was this, it was almost this weird feeling. When I first started using it, you know, I would say the first month of using my cane was, it was definitely just this kind of weird feeling of walking around.
Yeah. It almost like a feeling like you're not in your body. You're somebody. It's almost just like robotic. Like you just you're working the cane and not thinking of much else. And but then you obviously realize, wow, this gives me some independence. This allows me to go out and feel the ground and know that I can get around without, you know, falling down a, you know, crevasse or a sewer line.
Oh, yes.
And think that
exactly. And for me, you know, once I got started using it, now I do have a guide dog, which we can definitely get into here in a little bit. But when I first, you know, when I got comfortable using my cane, I would say after a couple months of using it, and I got really comfortable with it, you know, before, you know, I was talking about how I'd used, you know, before my vision really progressed to that point, people would say, you know, the door's open, you can walk in. But, you know, the best way I can describe this feeling is I used to play a lot of baseball, and when there was a fly ball and there's the fence, you got your eye on the ball and the fence is coming up, but you're watching the ball, you know, the fence could be 20 feet away or it could be 5, but it always feels like it's right there about to hit you. And that's the way it would feel when, you know, people would be like, my dad or my friend would hold the door up and they're like, you're good, you can just walk through. I didn't really know if the door, you know, I always would walk through with my hands, you know, right in front of my face just to make sure. But with the cane, you know, with my cane, it's, you know, it's just really easy. I trust it. It's just, you know, it's me in control of it. You learn, you know, I mean, of course it does not pick up on tree branches, but, but it does. It is really
the
nice.
High and low. Not above your head. Yeah. Well, and the reason I kind of wanted to ask you that is that that's one of the things that a lot of people do ask about and talk about is, you know, making that transition to using a white cane. And we all have our reasons why we do or don't use it. Many people don't in the community. I happen to use it when I need it. I always have it with me. But Justin, your vision has progressed to a point of one eye has a little bit of vision and the other eye not so much. Can you explain where your vision's at right now?
Yeah, and it's still, you know, it's funny to say that because even now, like, when my vision was progressing, you know, over the 8 months that it took, roughly, I would always, you know, I would always, even that video, so that video that you watched, you know, it was long after my vision had gone, but my, you know, in my head when I was creating it, you know, because I was the one that edited it and came up with everything, was I wanted, you know, a lot of people that watch my videos, they can see. So my goal with it was to show them what it was like going through the journey. And what I would do a lot would, I would close my right eye, I would close my left eye, and I would just keep comparing, and, you know, I could see the difference. And still to this day, you know, my left eye, really, both eyes, it's basically just this super thick fog, and I can see light and I can see the direction of the where the light comes from, but it's not, you know, it's just like a, this, it's really just like fog. Like, if you shine the light through super, super thick fog, it's just distorted light. And my left eye actually, you know, the light, it's really, my left eye is still worse. I noticed it yesterday, it's like, the light's not even as bright in my left eye as my right, so.
Yeah,
so my,
yeah.
My right eye is definitely just a teeny bit better, but there's, you know, I could not walk around with, you know, I have to have a cane or.
Assistance, Well, obviously the cane was, for you to get around, the cane was a must, obviously. And that kind of takes, I want to still get into, where you're at with your, you know, bodybuilding, but let's progress to Diesel. And what brought, how and what and where, when, how did Diesel come into your life?
Gotcha. So, soon as I got that cane, right when I was asking questions in November of 2016 about, you know, what exactly is the cane and how does it all work as far as getting it, I also already asked about guide dogs just because I was curious because I do have my guide dog named Diesel and I also have a chocolate lab named Cooper. So Cooper, I got, he is actually 3 years old, but I got him when he was 6 or 8 weeks old. And I was in college, and he was my first dog. He's a chocolate lab. But, you know, of course, I could, you know, I would take him on campus. Me and him would go run. And he's like, you know, he's my baby. And I've had him, you know, he's been a huge part of my life. He's been through me through a lot. And I wanted so badly to get him trained. And it didn't take too long to figure out that's not even possible. But I'm glad that I waited. So I actually went, I knew that I wanted to get a guide dog shortly after using a cane and really early on just because I really love dogs. And, you know, they are not only guiding you around, but it's also this companion. You know, I can honestly say that I don't ever want to live without a dog. Like, you know, I have both of Cooper and Diva are just laying here right now. They're just, they're the sweetest and caring animals, and they just, it's crazy how smart they are. It really blows my mind. I realized that, and I started talking around. There's a lady that lived around me that has had several guide dogs, and I just asked around, you know, I asked her a lot of questions, you know, how does it work, what do I need to do, and that was where, there's actually several different guide dog schools in the U.S., but I went to Guiding Guides for the Blind, and they're located in Yorktown Heights, New York. So I looked up and seen what I needed to do, and it was last August, I think, is when I, so you have to fill out this application and send them all of, I mean, as long as you're legally blind, you fit the, you know, requirements. So, I applied and they got back to me very quickly. They actually send out a rep to wherever you live. They fly them out there and they watch you. You have to be sufficient enough with your cane. And that's what one of, I guess, the things a lot of people don't realize is, you know, they're still dogs. They're not robots. And I still have to be oriented. And, for example, where I live now, I can actually walk to my gym. And I just recently moved here about 6 months ago, I think. And I walked it several times with my cane so that I would be well-oriented with the layout and I would know where I needed to go. And that's what they make sure that you're good enough with your cane. So when you do get a guide dog that you still have your orientation. And, you know, once they approve your application and everything like that, they actually, you know, they record you walking with your cane because they start trying to pair you up with a certain dog, depending on your size and how fast you walk and things like that. And they, you know, once you get approved and accepted, they try to fit you in a class. They have, I think, a class each month, one every month. And basically, you know, they pay for everything. And it's so amazing, the organization. Mm. So they paid for my plane ticket. I had to go to New York for 3 weeks and I was up there. They paid for, you know, they have a kitchen staff, which, you know, I'm in the bodybuilding. I actually gained 10 pounds while I was up there. This was, so my competition was in October. That was November when, so I was, been dieting for a while. So it was awesome.
You were ready to eat, too. Ready to get a dog ready to eat.
I was. And it was truly amazing. You know, that was the first time that I've ever been around other visually impaired and blind people. And it was just, it was a neat experience, that in itself, mm-hmm. being up there with different people. And, it was awesome.
Now, didn't you meet some folks there? One had the other labors, LCA, but you said mm-hmm. you met someone with LHON.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of funny. I flew up, and when I landed, they had, you know, someone waiting on you, and it's so amazing how good they take care of you. But we was waiting on someone else to land, and it was this lady. She landed, and then, you know, we were sitting there talking. We just literally just met, and, you know, we were just chatting, and then, of course, we, you know, got on the discussion. So, you know, what condition do you have? And she's like, oh, it's this rare condition. Not sure if you've ever heard of it. It's called labors. I was like, no way. No way. I was like, LHON? She goes, yeah. I was like, that's what I have.
So, what are the chances, really? You should have bought a lottery ticket, too, that day, right?
I know, yeah. So me and her were the only ones with LHON, and then there was one gentleman with the other one, which is that's the first time I've actually heard of that one.
LCA, it's, and you're born mm-hmm. with it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, yeah, and, you know, Diesel is... It's so amazing how well he does. It really amazes me, because with a cane, a cane, you have to feel like, for instance, if you're walking across the street and there's a manhole but the cover's off of it, mm-hmm. you're going to have to feel that for yourself, and you're going to, you know, for me, I would sit there and I would, like, you know, I'd be in the middle of the road trying to figure out what's going on here. And mm-hmm. for Diesel, he'll just swerve right around it, and you'll never know it's there.
Wow, that's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, they're really amazing.
Wow. Well, so tell us how you say you walk to the gym with Diesel. Mm-hmm. So tell us, let's move into your bodybuilding life and how you've been coming along with that. And I know Diesel hangs out at the gym with you. So let's talk about what you do over there in the gym.
Okay, so I guess I can. So I, I've been working out since, you know, I was the super skinny kid growing up. Always got made fun of for being too small to do this, too small. So that's what got me into working out when I was, like, 14. And I, like, instantly fell in love with it within the first year of doing it. I just loved doing it. And then in college is when I really got into actual, like, the style of working out where it's about the appearance and bodybuilding. And, you know, I always said I wanted to compete. And I never did, just because I was working, I was in school, and, you know, I just never did it. And then in 2016, when I moved home and all of this started, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I actually planned on doing it in 2016, but there was just so much I had to kind of learn how to do.
Mm-hmm.
I just waited until the next year. So that was when I actually, 2016 was when, and November is when I started my YouTube channel and learned how to use VoiceOver and learned how to basically edit videos without being able to see anything, and started documenting my journey as far as bodybuilding. And I progressed a lot, actually, when I moved home. I focused on training a lot harder and everything. And in 2016, I actually have a little series on YouTube, and it's called Shredding Sightless, which is just that's what I named the playlist and the series of me preparing for my first show. And about 6 months ago, October 28th was my first show that I did, and it was here in North Carolina. So that was an amazing experience.
How'd you do? We all want to know now. How'd you do?
I didn't place or anything. I did I think, because actually I did my diet, I did really everything myself, and it's kind of an interesting thing doing a sport that presumably requires vision. You know, a lot of these bodybuilders see what they look like and know what they need to work on, but for me, I strictly have to go off touch and feel. So I do think I dieted a little too, I was a little bit too lean. Not too lean, but I lost a little bit of my size the last week or two. Yeah, and it's the organization is a very competitive organization. It feeds into it goes into the pros, and you know, some of these, I mean, I'm sure a lot of, and maybe a lot of us have seen the Mr. Olympias, and you know, I went to the Arnold Classic this past weekend, and you know, that's the big dogs, that's the really, really big guys. So that's what this organization feeds into. But
anybody would be going to the first show probably not knowing what to expect. How's it going to go? How's this?
Mm-hmm.
But you did mention that you're not able to, you know, do the poses and see like where you need to work. You're absolutely right, in the mirror. And there was, I don't know what it was. I think the last video, that's the first one I looked at. You were just talking about a day in the life, which is what a lot of your videos are. And you were talking about how, you know, you kind of pinch, you know, the sides and the here and there and to see, you know, the fat, but and where you need to work. And you pan the camera to the mirror. And what's funny is that then I could see, but but you couldn't see it. So your viewers, FYI, they could see what you look like. Of course, I'm zoomed in bigger than the moon, right? And then you pan it back. And I thought it was a really cool thing that you did there to show, I can't see, but this is what I look like. And then pan back to yourself. But, you know, it was a really cool little point in the video. But the, getting through it, especially visually impaired, I know there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes at a show. And it can get a little chaotic, I'm sure.
Especially, you know, diet is everything. It's literally everything. Dieting, a lot of people see bodybuilding and, you know, the average person think it's just a bunch of meatheads that like to pick things up and put it back down. But dieting literally comes down to a science. And even working out is, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. You know, like I was in school for engineering, and it's kind of neat now, though. You know, I took a couple physics courses in college and a lot of calculus. And I apply that, you know, I never actually got a degree or anything, but, you know, I learned those things, and now I apply it in the gym, in the way I train, and things like that. So it's very, it is very interesting. And like you were saying with the camera, I do record for the, YouTube is a very visual, obviously it's a video platform, and I do cater to people that can see, and sometimes though it's really funny, like a few of the times my dad will be watching a video that I edited. And he's watching it on YouTube, and I'll be like, yeah, Diesel's over here somewhere. And I'm, you know, it's funny, I have like three little tags on him so I can hear him jingling.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I know where he's at. He always jingles. And, but I thought he was over there, but I'll point the camera over there where I think he is, and my dad's like, Diesel's not even in the picture. Like, you're pointing at the floor. I've cut my head off a few times.
Funny. Oh, yeah. Now, how many videos did you say you had? I think it's a pretty high number.
Yeah, there's a lot. I have playlists, though, that really, like, you know, I have some that are really my favorites because, like you mentioned, a lot of them are, you know, they're called, you know, just like you have a blog with a, you know, a B, you know, they're called video blogs, so a blog. And that's really what I really, you know, I enjoy doing. Just like I went to the Arnold Classic and that's kind of, you know, I uploaded a video today on that, which that was quite an experience.
Yeah. Well, Justin does have a YouTube channel, obviously you said, and is it your channel, is it Justin Holland or is there another name for the channel? Justin Holland.
It's Justin
on
Holland. Yep.
Okay. And you're very, very personable on your videos, by the way. I mean, one was, oh, hey, I didn't see you there. You start off with that. I'm like, that's classic. Go ahead.
I do have like a very, I've always been very, you know, a person to kid around and joke around, because I enjoy to have fun. I just enjoy having fun, you know. And
yeah.
I will say, you know, when I was dealing with this, rather than being super serious, not saying that I didn't take the situation seriously, but rather than getting down on the situation, you know, even my dad, like, I mean, he's my dad, so it's definitely fine. And even other people, like, I was the kind of person, my dad would hide, like, in the kitchen, you know, I would have a drink out, and then he would hide it behind a cereal box. And I would turn back around, and I knew he'd do it because I could hear him laughing. And my stepmom was like, that's not funny. That's not funny. But I was like, you know, I did enjoy having fun. And I definitely, there's a few videos on there where I have these little skits that I do in there. I think it's funny, you know.
Cool.
It's probably very corny.
Well, you know, the one thing, you know, you lose vision, but you can't lose your sense of humor, you know.
Exactly.
You just can't. And, you know, we all have our ups and downs, and, you know, it's just one day at a time sometimes. So I love how you bring humor into it. You bring your personality into it. And so folks can really get to know you if they check out your channel. You can find Justin on Facebook and Twitter as well. So what I'm going to do now is, Justin, I'm going to see if anybody out there wants to ask you any questions or they have any comments. But also, if you just have any question, maybe he said something that kind of triggered something you wanted to ask, please feel free to do so, because I'm opening up all the lines right now. So it's the open floor. And, Justin, thank you so much. And does anyone have anything they'd like to ask Justin?
I do.
Okay.
This is Paul Maria. Paul Dennett.
Hi. Hi. How are you, Paul?
Okay.
Hello.
I'm doing good.
Good.
I have a great question because I, too, go to the gym a lot, and I discuss it with Maria. But how do you – I've just listened to everything you said. I found it fascinating, and I was actually looking at one of the videos as we were – my face pressed against the computer to see one of your videos. And my biggest nightmare is finding things, and my gym is very messy. Like, people don't put things back, and it is, as you can imagine, it's a nightmare. It's horrible. And and as many times as I tell them, it's like, I was like, listen, you have to put the weights back, because my face is against a dumbbell, like, smelling it, but, you know, like, really close, and people don't realize what's going on. You know, people don't know. I don't have a dog or anything to let people know. But, getting around the gym, how do you do that? Like, I mean, and also, like, if it's like a, you know, 40-pound weight, and how do you have somebody, you work with a trainer?
I know, it's all me. I mean, sometimes I'll have people work out with me, but it's not, like, I would say about 90% of the time, it's just me. So before I had my dog, literally finding stuff, you know, I'm right there with you. Especially clips, it's the most annoying thing ever. I have found no solution. I put it back. You know, I'm probably the cleanest person in the gym.
Me too.
As far as dumbbells, I know to go, you know, I start from one side and I count. I know where they're, you know, I know that where they're at, and then I just count, of course, you know, they're in pairs. So, I just keep going across, because I definitely, you know, I can't, like, just look at the number or anything. I can sometimes feel the numbers on the rubber ones.
I do that.
But it's, you know, sometimes they're wore out and stuff like that. But as far as carrying things, you know, like a 45-pound plate, especially with my cane, I'll just, you know, I'll have it in one hand and I'll be walking with my cane in the other. And I'll even do that with my guide dog as well. He can, you know, he navigates me around the gym and things like that. And so, yeah, that's really how I do it. And then, one good thing is I have a very, very good memory, so it definitely helps me out, and I can learn the layout of even new gyms. If I go there for if it's a new gym, 100% have to have help, because I would not know where there would be no way. I mean, without having someone direct me towards where the squat rack is or where this machine is. But once I do learn it, you know, it's just a matter of figuring out how to work around the gym and, you know, where people tend to hide things. People do catch on with me. I'll be feeling around and I'll pick something up in the big jumble thing of, like, the attachments for the cables. And a lot of times, you know, just about everybody in the gym, you know, knows who I am. So they'll come up and you know, they'll just ask, you know, what are you looking for? And they'll help me out sometimes. But it's definitely a struggle, trust me.
Yeah, it really is. That's great, though, Justin. That's really great.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else? Please, let's chat.
Hey, Justin. It's Wayne Daniels. And how you doing, Paul?
Good, man. How you doing?
Wondering, the lady that got off the plane you were waiting for, I was just wondering if we know her or do you remember her name?
The plane
for the C9 doll that had LHON.
Oh, her name is Hannah. I think I can get, I can message her. I think I am, because we have a little group that's our class from, our whole guide dog class, which is like 10 people or so on Facebook. So I can definitely maybe find her. But her name is Hannah. I don't remember. And it's spelled Hannah, but the way you pronounce it is Hannah. Because she would, like, everybody would say Hannah and she would keep saying, it's Hannah. But I can't remember her last name, but I can probably find it out. But I don't think.
That's okay. I'm just curious if we knew her. She was in any of the groups.
Is she from Massachusetts?
Boston. Yep. She's from Boston. She lives in Boston.
Sounds like Lissa knows who it is.
Yeah, I think there's a Hannah in the group from Massachusetts. Boston.
And her dog's name is Kobe.
That's more than I know.
Okay.
Well, if Lissa knows her, then she's come across the groups at some point. So yeah, but I mean, what are the chances? That's crazy, you know. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, does anyone else want to speak up?
Yeah, I have a question. This is Howard Sumner from Massachusetts.
Hello.
A very, very impressive story, Justin.
Well, thank you.
But my question is engineering. Do you have any thoughts about going back to finish your engineering degree?
You know, I don't have a desire to go back. One thing with engineering school, I'm not sure if anybody else here has ever went to engineering school, but it is quite, and it's definitely, I was a junior. It's not the easiest, but especially one thing for me, a lot of these classes are physics classes and things like that with the drawing and these images. But for me, the way I learned best in these classes, especially once you start getting into dynamics and these solid mechanics and these classes that are strictly with mechanical things, and you're drawing these diagrams, was I learned very much off of watching someone do a problem, and I learned off of drawing drawing these sketches and all of that. That's really the way I learned. And if I had to say which one am I more passionate about, it would definitely be fitness, health and fitness, and bodybuilding. You know, I guess the main reason I was going for engineering was in hopes of, like I mentioned at the very beginning of the call, I've always been into motorsports, whether it be, dirt bikes, ATVs, and especially cars and trucks and things like that. So my desire with engineering was to hopefully, go into designing. Within motorsports, that's what I've always wanted to do with that degree. So.
Yep. Well, I think it's very admirable for you to follow your passion and just proceed with what you're doing. So good luck with it.
Well, thank you so much.
This is also the time, guys, to remember, if there's anything else you want to ask, not even related to fitness, bodybuilding, or cars.
Yeah, feel free.
Yeah, feel free. Sometimes things, life after sight loss, as they say, sometimes good things come out of it. I mean, if that's as weird as it sounds, but here you are now able to do what you really, really love, and you're pursuing it. And, I have to, there's silver lining. You got to drop everything else away and pick up the pieces and go this direction. And you weren't able to do that before. So, I just think sometimes that life after sight loss can bring you some gifts.
again, that sounds weird.
No, I totally agree, and I even tell people I see it as a blessing almost. I know that sounds kind of bad saying that, but at the same time, it's really, no pun intended, but it's really opened my eyes to a lot of things. It's changed my perspective on how I view a lot of things. And where I was in 2016 to now, it's like, it's crazy. I wouldn't be where I am right now if I wouldn't have lost my vision. And I definitely wouldn't be, making YouTube videos and, pursuing my dreams and passion, doing what I am. So, I almost see it as a blessing, even though it does have some pretty difficult times, I still, and that's one of the things, like, I definitely still have those down periods in my life. I think when it was all happening, I tried to stay as busy as possible, and I tried to find something I was passionate about, which for me was very easy because I already knew what I was passionate about. But, even though I've pretty much lost my vision now, it's still, when I find myself not that busy and not having too much to do, that's when those dark times definitely come on, and they can blindside you pretty quickly.
Kind of, the thinking, you start thinking and thinking and overthinking. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I totally get the, I always say a busy blind girl or boy is a happy blind girl or boy, because you're not thinking about, sitting there thinking I can't do this or I can't do that type of thing. But yeah, and I think that, finding that passion, Justin, really gave you a reason to pick up the pieces and move on. Do you agree?
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah. Just because, rather than, and that's one of my big things is, if you get to thinking and you start thinking, well, I can't do this, and that's what really that's what gets me is when I start thinking, and it's a situation where I wouldn't have this problem if I could simply see. That's what really, when it'll really get me. It's because something so simple as, for me, it could be reading a nutrition label or something very, very simple that someone that can see can do, less than 5 seconds might take me 15 minutes. And it's definitely can be frustrating.
That throws you off. Definitely, it'll throw you off. And everything, I say, everything takes 5 times longer, with the assistive technology, it does help and make things easier all the time with new apps and things coming out. But, it's those reality facts of things take longer. You have to adjust. You have to do it differently. All of that reality, comes into play. And, will we ever not have those down periods? I think we always will, but they just get shorter. Mm-hmm. And, they don't last for a week or, longer even for some. But, as the years go by, those little I can's going, well, maybe I can. There's got to be a way. You're a little more open to that kind of thing. That's a great philosophy, obviously. And you said, I can't see my body, but I'm a bodybuilder. You're just like, I'm just going to work around it, and you have. So we're getting to kind of close to the top of the hour. So I wanted to perhaps get a quick little, a little PR moment here for the conference. And as you all know, our LHON conference is coming up this June, and it's June, 28th, 29th. I'm pretty sure.
It's
a 2-day conference. And how it's going to work this year is we're going to have a lot more networking time. And when I say networking, I mean hanging out time. Okay. So, we're starting off the conference on a Thursday. It's starting midday. The morning will be some networking, registration, checking people in. Then we have a full program for the afternoon. That evening will be a meet and greet, which is kind of an official little get together where, everyone goes and, you know, see who's there and who's not there and catch up with old friends or make new friends within the community. And then the following day, Friday, the program will start in the morning promptly, I'm sure about 8 o'clock or something like that, full morning program. And then we are done around 12:30, something like that. And we are set loose in Nashville at that time.
Oh, God.
So, you know, we have all Friday afternoon, and some folks like to stay through the weekend, you know, if they want to do some sightseeing or maybe beforehand. But Thursday and Friday are the days you want to circle, you know, stay overnight on Thursday night to Friday, take off on Friday again. You know, if the budget doesn't allow or time constraints with work and whatnot, you know, just know that you can slide in there early Thursday morning and get out later Friday and only stay one night in the hotel. I do suggest that you book your hotel, even if you're not sure you're, you know, going to be able to attend, because those hotel rooms go fast. And I know there's been information on the LHON Facebook group. I try and always link things over into the LHON to LHON group. So the information is out there. And if you can't find it, just post on the group, you know, hey, where's the hotel information, and we'll get it to you. Or message Lissa, message myself, and we'll get you the information. So it is so much fun. It's filled with so much information. Lissa has been working a lot with Molly Knox, who is John Knox's daughter, and as if you went to the conference last year, John Knox is affected, and his daughter is amazing. And so Molly's been doing some amazing things, gathering some great information. I'm going to be filling in the back end this year, and it's just going to be a great time. And you'll not only make friends, but you'll learn a lot as well. So as Wayne says, he'll never miss another conference ever, you know, if you can at all possibly make it. Wayne knows firsthand what it was like to attend his first conference and the people he met. It just changed everything.
Amazing.
And
it's
family you never knew you had. It truly, truly is. And, you know, I look forward to getting together that one time a year to see everyone again. And it's the only time you're going to have other affected people in one place. And I think last year, I don't know if Lester's still on, I think we might have had 30-something affected, which just doesn't happen, you know, on its own. So, you know, and there's also, again, not just affected.
I think
you
it
know,
was
carriers.
40.
You think it was between 30, 40?
I think it was like 30, 38, 39, 40.
Okay. Hey, yeah. It very well could have been. I can see the picture in my mind right now. But also for spouses, parents, brothers, sisters, significant others, they are all welcome, and they will take away something from this two-day conference. They will meet others in their exact same position, you know, like I said, either spouse or parents, or a brother or a sister, or even a son or a daughter. My son and daughter both went last year, and, yeah, that was an experience. So, anyway, you know, so highly, highly, highly recommend, if you can any way attend, please do. So registration is going to be out very soon. I just saw an email from UMDF. So keep a watch for information on registration, because it's going to be out any day now. So does anyone have any questions about the conference?
Maria, it's Lissa. Can I toss out two other
Please.
So one is, everything Maria described is all true and accurate about the LHON conference. In addition, as folks who've been there before know, we're a smaller piece of sort of two larger conferences. So as many of you know, LHON is a mitochondrial disease. There are lots of mitochondrial diseases out there. Many of them have much different symptoms than what we have, which is why we meet separately, because the stuff people are dealing with, vision loss, is different than what a lot of people are dealing with the other mitochondrial diseases. But the scientists who are working on it, you know, they're working on the mitochondria. They're trying to fix the mitochondria. And so what's happening is there's a four-day scientific conference going on with a lot of doctors in the world of mitochondria and a lot of companies working on therapeutic options for mitochondrial disease. That's happening in a four-day conference. In addition, the United Mitochondrial Disease Foundation, the UMDF, they have a two-day conference for their patient community. And their conference is taking place on Friday and Saturday. So what we're doing this year, more than we've done in the past, is we're trying to make it so that if anyone wants to attend for the whole conference, including not just our LHON piece, but also continue on through Friday afternoon, Friday night, and all day Saturday for the rest of the UMDF conference, we're making sure that there's enough content to make it absolutely worth your while, and it also gives you the opportunity to kind of hang out and network with the people who are there. There will definitely be a handful of people for sure, and maybe, you know, a couple of big handfuls of people that'll stay through the rest of it. And then, like I said, the content will be valuable. So there's kind of two ways to go after it. If you kind of just want to get in, get out, and keep it as low budget as possible, the early bird price on the LHON conference will be $42. You can come in Thursday morning, enjoy Thursday afternoon, Friday morning, and get out of Dodge and, you know, one hotel night, okay, fine. Or if you want to stay for the whole UMDF conference, so you come Thursday morning and stay through Thursday, Friday, and even Saturday, it's only $115 for all the meals and registration associated with that whole time frame. So it's an option. It's an opportunity. Some of us will be there that whole time. It's marginally more expensive, but again, there's an early bird price of $115, and it includes the UMDF does a big banquet Friday night, which a standalone price is $65. So you know, it's a cost-effective option, and then like I said, the content will make sure that there'll be that the speakers who are talking about topics will understand that the LHON community is there too. So when they talk about genetics 101, when they talk about sleep issues, when they talk about SSDI, they'll know that there's an LHON perspective. That's one thing I wanted to mention. The other thing I wanted to say is on LHON.org, there is a tab. It's like the rightmost tab on the top nav that says conference. And that's where I try to keep updated information. So if you're looking, like Maria said, if you're looking for information about the hotel or registration or whatever, I try and keep that updated. So look there first. So those are the two things. Go ahead.
Great. Question. Thank you. No, great. No, that's, thank you, Lissa. No, that's perfect. And that's very important stuff for sure. So with that said, if anyone has any questions at all, now is the time just to throw it out there. We have folks on the call who have had, you know, LHON been affected for 40 or more years, and we probably have folks that are new. If anyone, I know I wasn't, you know, on for the little, you know, warm-up, but if anybody is new and wants to speak up and say hello, we'd love to hear from you as well. You don't have to. We love it if you just sit there and listen. The fact that you got on the call is a big deal to us. So we can probably get to the point where we can stop the recording, but we'd like anybody who wants to stay on the call, please do so. And if you feel there's something you want to talk about not being recorded, that would be the time that we could talk. And so what I'm going to do, I'm going to wrap it up here with a little closing, but please feel free to stay on the call. And, you know, we always have some good conversations. So if there's anything you'd really like to bring up, you know, stay on the line. But Justin, thank you so much for being on the call. And, you know, it was wonderful. It was great to get to know you even more through this call. And I hope we see you more and more through the community and hopefully at the conference.
Thank you so much for having me on here. Yeah, I'm hopefully going to be coming out to the conference. That's definitely on my calendar.
Awesome.
So
that'd be great. So anyway, the next
conference call is going to be April, and I don't have the date, so someone can yell it out if they want to. It's the first Wednesday of every month, so no matter what, we have that call first Wednesday.
April.
Tonight was
April 4th. April 4th.
April 4th. So what is that? 4-4. Woo, 4-4. yeah, so it'll be April 4th. Same time, same place, all that stuff. And I promise you, one of the other co-hosts, either Jessica or Andy, they won't be late like me. So, again, my big, huge, huge apologies for that. Just, you know, it's a vision thing. I don't know. You know, you might relate. So I'm going to – so, Lissa, I'm going to have you go ahead and stop the recording, which I believe is – star 2 again, I think.
I'll try
So hang on, everyone.